This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. Made with a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. To learn more, visit rt11.com. This week on Meat and Three, we're exploring interactions from drug studies in a laboratory.
If this effect is as big as he's saying, somebody should have discovered this long before he did.
To global wisdom on avoiding hangovers.
Beber cerveza antes de tomar vino no previene los síntomas.
Bière sur vin et venant, vin sur bière et belle manière.
Beer before wine, you're going to be fine. Wine before beer, you're going to be queer.
To the novel recipes developed by an Indian American family deep in the heart of Texas.
And then my mom's sort of coming to America and learning that white parents love to melt cheese on things to get their kids to eat it. She was like, this is genius.
Be sure to subscribe to Meat in Three. That's M-E-A-T plus sign T-H-R-E-E. Available wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show, Life's a Banquet. The show that's edible, spreadable, and Zara.
Horrible!
Starring your hosts, me, Brenton Scott, and
me, Zara Tangora.
A show about chocolate and wine and bread, champagne and scandal and crackers in bed.
I'm drunk!
Always.
Life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet, life's a banquet.
Want another?
Consider it done.
Welcome everybody to the show, Life's Banquet, a podcast about all things edible, spreadable, and pourable, and the highs and lows of those things with your hosts, Brenton Scott.
And Zara Tangora.
Hi, Brenton. Oh my gosh, spring break.
Spring break. I am so tan. I've had a lot of, what are those called? Malibu and Diet Cokes?
Yes.
Yeah, lots of Malibu and Diet Cokes.
Sex on the beach.
I'm just kidding. I didn't have any of those things because I was in New York working.
You are all oiled up. You mentioned earlier that you sunbathed today in a Speedo in Fort Greene Park. Is that true? True
or
false?
It is true. Right before at 1 p.m. during prime season, I got a little base tan. It's never too early.
You look amazing with those blonde highlights. And what did you do your spring break? Did you vacation?
No, I worked with you.
Oh, yes, right. We were stuck in a greasy hot kitchen.
We consulted on a pub food restaurant. You remember?
No, I blocked it from my memory.
We were frying chickpeas and making french fries and tacos and
yes.
What else did we make?
It's all coming
nachos.
Back.
Nachos.
All coming back.
Pinto
to
beans.
Me now.
Okay, so listen, check this out. We're here, and I would be very rude if I wasn't standing here and not saying anything because we have a very, very, very special guest, one of my personal baking heroes, Rose Levy Barenbaum. Did I pronounce?
Well, it's really Levy on the East Coast. On the West Coast, it's lovely.
Well, I'm from Wisconsin.
It's always lovely, Rose.
I'm from Wisconsin, so okay. So for those of you that are just
Westerner, good.
Exactly. And also, Woody is. Are you officially the assistant, the baking assistant? What's your
role? He's the collaborator. In fact,
a collaborator.
I'm the work husband.
My partner in creme.
Yeah.
Oh, a partner in creme. Rose, you.
I did not come up with that. It was Publishers Weekly, and I love it. I appropriated.
It's great. Mm. It's
okay,
amazing.
So just a little history here. So Rose wrote the cookbook, the baking. Well, the first one was the cake Bible, or is it the pie and pastry
the
Bible?
The cake Bible.
Cake Bible was the 1989, correct?
88. But you're close.
I was just a.
And it's how old does it make it? I guess 32 years.
I was in.
He was saying how old he was.
No. I was.
Brenton's over 300.
I was 11 when that came out, and I do remember I was very excited because I'd just gotten a KitchenAid. And I was just starting to bake. I was a little 11-year-old, and I was like, you know, I think, when did pie and pastry come out?
Because later.
Well, about
10 years later.
The first thing I remember from your cake Bible, my mom got me the cookbook, and I was really excited. I was like, oh my God, this woman's insane. And just because you were so detailed, and I was like, I've never heard anybody speak like
but
the
Brett,
science.
But I was so lucky, 11 years old, to have a KitchenAid. I had to wait until I was 23.
And to have your book.
I had to wait until you gave me one.
And that was where I learned. Anyway, and I remember reading through neoclassic buttercream and all these things and yellow cakes and white cakes and what makes things rise and that. And so I learned pretty much everything. And then when I got your pie and pastry Bible, then I was then that's when I got into pastries, and I pretty much learned everything through your book.
Oh my
and
gosh.
I never went to pastry school. I never went to anything. But I was like, but I read the pie and pastry bob on the cake book. So I think I know.
You know more than a lot of people who go to culinary school.
Yeah.
I mean, the details that I put in that pastry bible, I don't think I could ever do again.
Yeah.
But what about bread baking? Do you do that too?
I do. I have the bread bible. I actually got into bread baking because of Zara's restaurant.
Oh, wow.
So Zara used to bake her own bread and my
cooks. So I was the executive chef at my restaurant, as I just mentioned when we were catching up before the show. I've never made two things in life. I've never made a cup of coffee, and I've never made bread. However, my restaurant did make a really the bread team that we had made a fabulous naturally fermented sourdough. With the starter is still alive.
Why is it you never made coffee?
I was told.
I have a story about that.
I was told as a young child, never by my mother, to never follow any rules or instructions. And I've always, for some reason in my head, attributed coffee as being something that is you must pay perfect attention to. And thus, I've never made it.
See, I have to tell you that. All the years that I was going to night school and working as a secretary, I always had to make people's coffee. And I thought, when I finally graduate and I've got my master's eventually, I'm never making coffee again for CEOs or whomever. Mm-hmm. And sure enough, somebody asked me when I was working at Ladies Home Journal, my first legitimate food job, and I wouldn't do it. The head of the test kitchen had to do it. It was just like my big principal. That's why I thought you were saying that.
Yeah.
Because I was a rule breaker from the word go-to.
Who's the new girl? And she's like, I don't know, but she doesn't make coffee.
She does not make coffee.
That was the only thing I didn't do. Well, that's because it was before the Me Too movement, so I wasn't asked to do other things.
Can I put something in here?
You sure, Woody?
Yes, please, Woody.
I think we should give him a diploma.
A diploma.
Oh my God! I can
from Bible.
I have them.
From Bible.
You know, when I had a cooking school.
From Bible University.
Oh my God! I'm nearly tears. So I would just like to say for my graduation speech, I'm gonna get drunk. And I'm just kidding.
I haven't gotten it yet.
Exactly. Hold on,
invite us back, and we will really bring you a diploma. I still have them. I hope you didn't throw them out.
I'll drive to get one.
Look at Bretton's face. He's never been more excited.
If we can find it, we can send it.
Oh my gosh! I'll have to make you the. You know what? I always love that cream cheese crust because that's just a good one. And I just saw a recipe on somewhere online.
You would love it and you've never made it?
No, I made it. I said I've always loved that one because it was...
I think I've never tasted a better one. And I've always loved cream cheese and a butter crust, but it wasn't flaky. So it was my goal to be able to have the flavor and the texture of an old butter crust.
I mean, how about that for goal setting?
Yeah, so if you look at the baking Bible, we zeroed all the crust down to basically that.
Wow.
Wow, that's amazing.
Besides the sucre, but for flaky crust, that's it. Mm. And baking basics, the same thing.
Rose, what do you think, and Woody, both of you, what do you think are your most successful recipes that you've ever developed, being such intricate, amazing recipe developers and being the authority on baking and cooking of all things
Funny you should ask, Zara, because what we were just talking about, I wanted to be a pie crust pilgrim and go around and teach people all over the country and the world, except for flour varies all over the world.
Of course.
But I'm more proud of that crust than most anything I've done. The other thing
That's
my number one. Oh, and then God, the neoclassic buttercream, where you can make a buttercream without needing to have a thermometer.
Well, those are the two things that I will say those did stick out. So I guess the classic.
And the chocolate rolled fondant, because that had not existed before. There was plastique, but it didn't taste good. The fondant is like a Tootsie Roll, plus it's like leather. Oh. It's such a dream to work with. Okay. And now they're actually producing it in Australia commercially, not with any credit to me, of course, or money for that matter. But I'm proud of the fact.
Who cares? You don't need it.
I mean, I don't like to say I invented, because many people come up with the same thing.
Right.
But these are three things that were truly my original.
That's amazing.
The deep passion.
Yes, that's a cake that's really special.
Can you please tell us that we love deep passion?
You explain, Woody. You love the idea of it or the actual recipe? The recipe.
Or just that you love deep passion in general.
I was like,
it's a chocolate chiffon cake, but you don't beat the egg whites to a meringue like you normally would.
Okay.
Well, the whole point is that you needed more strength if you didn't have a center tube. And my goal was to have a chocolate chiffon cake with all its wonderful texture, but without having to have it baked in a tube pan. And the trick, it turned out at the end, was that you don't beat the egg whites. You add them to the batter at the very end and then beat like crazy. And at first, nothing happens. And I remember calling Woody, who was still living in Minnesota at the time.
You're like, yeah, oh,
and,
no.
I said, once again, it's not rising. And it only filled the pan about a quarter full. And all of a sudden, it was like it levitated and came to the top of the pan. And it was
fabulous.
It was light. It's fudgy. And that's why we called it the Deep Chocolate Passion. And we made it as a wedding cake in all different sizes.
Did you have that in the Roses Heavenly Cakes?
Yes.
Which I just happen to have right here in case you want to autograph it later. No big deal.
In fact, that'll segue into what we're doing now.
Yes, right. Yes. So today we've all brought you here to celebrate one of our favorite confections of all time. And it's perfect because you guys are now writing. The new book is about...
Wait. You bake bread for...
I bake bread for what?
You make...
Where are you leading
to? Your passions for your different desserts.
Oh, okay. In other words, that I'm known for cake? Is that what you're saying? Yeah, because of the cake Bible.
Exactly.
I'm known for cake. I'm most proud of the pie crust.
Okay.
And what was the other thing? And the thing I like making best is bread, but the thing I like eating most is... Ta-da! Ice cream.
Ice cream! We're all screaming about ice cream.
Or as I like to say in French... Glace, because is that not the most fabulous word? It is like, would you like two scoops of glace, as they say in French?
Anyway, well, the thing is, though, it's going to be out exactly a year from this month.
So
I call it, instead of fanning the flames, fanning the dry ice. Get the excitement going, because you have to think, people can buy ice cream. They can go to boutique places, but why make your own? And the reason is because when you make your own, you don't have to use any preservatives or additives. Mm. So you get the pure flavor. You could always tell when the additives are added.
Yeah.
Right. Of course.
That said, one of the great achievements in this book was producing a Turkish ice cream. I'd seen pictures of it in Turkey online, stretching it about a foot in the air. And I thought, how am I going to do this? After much research, I found there were two ingredients needed. One is salep, which comes from the root of orchids and is rare and hard to find. And the other is mastic. And you have to grind it up. And that's what gives it the texture. The flavor you can do as you want. And we just discovered a place.
Just by chance.
What is it? Booze? I thought it was alcohol. Republic of Booza. Because it's actually known, this method of making ice cream, as Booza.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that amazing?
Yes, it is.
And it's
amazing.
In Turkey and the Mideast. Greece.
It's kind of been trending. And I'm glad that you stumbled across that.
Yeah, we stumbled upon it because I had never had it. That was made by anybody else other than me, because when we started working on the book, nobody had heard of it in this country. And my grandson happened to be going to Turkey, and he came back with, oh, this is really interesting ice cream. And so I started researching, and I thought, even if nobody can get the ingredients, at least they'll know what it is. I want to put a recipe in. And all of a sudden, in Brooklyn, I don't know where, maybe around the country, Turkish ice cream is really hot.
Yes.
Or cold.
Can I ask you a quick question just on when you said, and I started experimenting. How, when you have an idea for a new cake, a new ice cream, a new recipe, and let's say it's a challenge like that, how many times do you think that either both of you, since you're both collaborating together, how many times do you think you actually make it? Or like,
it really depends on what the recipe is. Like Woody has just made this incredible churro pie that he posted on the blog for Cinco de Mayo.
What? Woody?
How many times?
Pie?
It's unbelievable.
Gramercy Tavern.
Yeah.
They do an annual Thanksgiving pie contest by all their employees. So we're kind of the the Simons of the judging panel. We're always asked to come back every year to help judge their pies. And it was
How fun.
What a fabulous job.
Tasting 22 pies. And trying to remember them all.
Fair enough.
True.
But this, the pastry chef, Ariella, comes out with this churro pie shell. And
that sounds delightful.
And she just said, you'll never taste anything like this before. Of course we had. She filled it with a chocolate ganache bottom.
Okay. Listening.
Then cajeta.
I don't speak Spanish, but
cajeta,
I speak culinary.
Cajeta mousse.
It's delicious.
Cajeta mousse filling.
Oh my God.
Cajeta caramel.
How many tests did you do, Woody?
How many?
Well, the key is to make the pie shell so it doesn't deep fry and fall apart.
Okay.
Right.
And so that alone is
an engineering challenge.
Yeah. So I did... I did her method, and I did at least eight.
Eight.
Only two were presentable, so I revised how to pipe it.
Oh. He did this in his home, and every morning he would come and I'd say, what's that weird smell?
Me.
Fat fry. The oil got into
it. Do you have baking depression when it doesn't turn out, or are you just very,
no, I just,
are you like, okay,
like,
next,
it's like, moving. Well, that just happened.
Yeah. I did.
Oh, yeah. You do get
that.
Not,
you not be... again. He said, well, how many times do you test your things? True, some things I've tested 20 times. Mostly I don't have to do that.
Then I've outnumbered you.
Pardon?
Because in the not in the baking Bible, we have the Renee Fleming cake.
Oh, yeah, that was a challenging cake.
Which is a chiffon cake baked without center.
Renee Fleming is a fabulous opera singer, in case of those.
Yes. Thank you for mentioning that.
Yeah.
We call this the golden
Fleming.
She's a diva. Fleming.
Sure, diva.
Oh, yeah. Mm. We have to tell a story about that. But anyway, that took 26.
Oh, my gosh.
26. Okay, so basically.
Well, and the reason why we did 26 is at round 20, it looked pretty well set.
Uh-huh.
But I thought we'll try it. A little less baking powder, a little bit more baking powder. We'll try to find where it fails both ways.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We really have to tell you a really hot tip about ice cream. Because there
please.
All right, cool.
Well, not
tips.
Only is there a reason for making ice cream because you can make it pure, but you can also make the flavors that you want. And my goal was to make a creamy ice cream. If it's going to be icy, might as well make sorbet.
Absolutely.
So one of the tips is when you're making berry ice creams is to concentrate the juices. And the best way to do it is by freezing the berries. You don't have to cook the berry part because that stays fresh and vibrant. But the juices get reduced down. And, you know, and not just baking and dessert, but in culinary, you always see recipes that say reduce it by one third or by one quarter, and you never know what that is. And every pan is going to be different.
Of course.
When I made your ginger peach pie in your right?
Yes, it's
the
same
concept. That was
the
first time I'm like, oh my God, reduce the peach juice.
Right.
I've always
Very
wanted
smart.
To write an article, The Art of Concentration, because I think that's one of my claims to fame, if I have any, is that you can get more purity of flavor without thickening when you do that. Anyway, this spatula, which has just become available,
it's
being carried by...
We're looking at a very beautiful spatula that Zabar's was gifted.
Zabar's is carrying it. They're going to carry my whole product line. It's
you have a
any
product
day now.
Line.
Yeah, it's a Rose's Signature Series. And this silicone spatula has markings on it that won't come off because they're just slightly raised. And they will tell you whatever you start off with, how much you want to end up with.
That's
very smart.
I don't know why nobody's ever thought of this before, and I don't know why it took me so long to come up with it.
Isn't that funny? The simple little things.
Well, 2019.
The hula hoop of spatulas. Plus, you can use it for stirring as well. You know, getting underneath the paddle beater of a KitchenAid.
Yeah, it's almost like a little. You could like flip a little. Uh-huh.
It's great. We're looking at a rubber, basically like a red, beautiful rose-colored red spatula.
Yes,
it's
rose.
Silicone. It can be used in the microwave, too.
Oh, wow. Oh. Fabulous. Amazing. Well,
dishwasher safe.
We're going to examine this beautiful gift. And when we come back from this quick break, we are going to hear a little bit about a story. Every week on Life's Bank, we do a little story from history. So this week, we're going to talk about something near and dear to all of our hearts. So we'll be right back after this break.
This episode is brought to you by Route 11 Potato Chips. From the moment Route 11 dropped their first batch of chips back in the early days of 1992, they understood their destiny as a high-quality producer. Instead of succumbing to the frenzy of mass production, they took advantage of their small size and made chipping a personal art form. The payoff was immediate, an incredible potato chip. With a secret recipe and superior ingredients, their mission is to make an outstanding product in a safe and clean environment. In this world of uncertainty that we live in, Route 11 Potato Chips believe comfort food can be just that. Know where your food comes from. To learn more, visit rt11.com.
Are you enjoying this podcast?
Heritage Radio Network has plenty more.
I'm Patrick Martins.
I'm Brandon Hoy.
And I'm Emily Pearson. Together we host The Main Course OG, where we cover food news and culture. Browse episodes of The Main Course OG wherever you listen to podcasts and on heritageradionetwork.org.
Heard it.
What?
What was that?
And smash, we're back.
We're back. So, guys, let me ask you all a question.
Yes.
Sure. So, when you think of ice cream, what two names are really most synonymous? What sticks out in your head? Breton?
I think of Haagen-Dazs.
Okay. Woody? Any names? Any two male names that happen to stick out in your head?
Ben and Jerry's?
Yes!
Oh, my God.
Ben
I feel like he was...
I think we handed that to you.
I feel like he got a little
Do I get to say two?
Yes, Rose.
Oh, yeah.
Friendlies, because I had my first, and I didn't know it was called avocado. Oh. I didn't even pronounce it. When I went with my great uncle and as a little girl in the Berkshires, and he had been a soda jerk as a kid, and he ordered vanilla ice cream. It was like five easy pieces. He wanted just a teaspoon of coffee on top. He said, that is the ultimate. And they said, order a cup of coffee. And he said, no, I just want this teaspoon. Oh. Then he said, you know what? Hold the, what was the three easy pieces? Hold the sandwich.
Oh, yes. Hold the coffee. He just wanted rye toast, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I was very impressed by that. And it wasn't until about 10 years ago that I had an actual avocado with a lot more coffee. But it is
just
one of the
10 years ago.
Things. That was I'd never heard of it. I thought it was an avocado.
Right. Interesting. And I've been to Friendly's of all places. Yeah. How fascinating.
And I still like Friendly's ice cream, but not all of it. I like rocks over caramel, or was it the nuts over caramel? And hot fudge. That's my Friendly's thing when I'm not making my own. That's the only thing that I go out for.
Yes.
Ice cream is, well, until now, after your book comes out.
That's true.
We'll all be coming over to each other's houses for ice cream. So, Sara.
Yes. So, this week I want to tell everyone a little story about two men who we all know and love, or don't love, or kind of have mixed feelings about, Ben and Jerry. So, Ben Cohen and Jerry Greenfield founded their company in the year 1978 in Vermont, and they started with $12,000, which was borrowed mostly from their families. They each had $4,000, and I think then they got an additional $4,000 from borrowing it. And they started like a little kind of ice cream shop. They were two guys who met in Long Island in gym class, and they didn't really know what they were doing. One of them, I believe it was Ben, was into pottery, and his parents were worried he wouldn't have any kind of real career going forward. And they would stand on the streets, and they would do... You guys know back in the day when you were trying to figure out how to... I actually, when I was starting my business, the SBA still suggested this, to do the clicker thing. And you stand on a corner, and you do how many clicks of how many people walk by.
Yeah, like
by.
If you're going to open a coffee shop, you'd be like, okay, at 8 a.m., 20 people per hour walk by this.
Look, living in Manhattan, you never had to click. I mean, there were always people.
Exactly. You have to just kind of close your eyes and pretend how many people are not there. It's the opposite. Mm-hmm. So they moved up. They had copied a business plan from a New York City pizza restaurant. And they said they just replaced all of the pizzas with ice cream to make the business plan fit so they can kind of get a little bit of an investment. And they became really well known, as we all know, for their large, lustrous chunks.
Yes.
Before that, chunks were not a big thing. Rose, how do you feel about chunks in ice cream? Are you do you put chunks in your ice cream?
Yeah, but it depends on what type of chunks. Like, I love what Woody came up with. He calls it "Bust Your Bourbon Balls Ice Cream."
Oh,
yes,
Woody.
I would not have named
Woody.
It takes a guy to name something like that. Yeah.
Okay.
And so they're chunks of bourbon balls, and they are fantastic.
Oh my god, that
sounds
amazing!
Adult cookies and cream.
That sounds...
And seriously, adult-only cookies and cream. Yeah.
That sounds absolutely fabulous. So the thing that I always actually thought about Ben and Jerry's, though, that was the most captivating, the most interesting, even as a kid, because I kind of grew up in like a hippie family, and it was always like they had a social agenda, like a social activism agenda. They've always been, as themselves, Ben and Jerry, have always been really interested in kind of progress. They had, in the 80s, they had Rainforest Crunch, Economic Crunch. These were just different kind of fun names, and each time they come up with a fun flavor to support something, they donate a really large percentage to the charity of in question.
Cherry Garcia
is just a novelty name.
Yeah.
One Sweet World, which was about global warming.
That's right.
Yes, Pecan was during Barack Obama was elected president, a play on Yes, We Can. And they, it goes on and on. And they're really involved in just social justice, and they came out in support. Even after they sold their company to Unilever, which was a big deal because Unilever is a big, giant conglomerate, they still kept the message of Ben and Jerry's social justice going forward, environmental justice. Now, the pushback is that Ben & Jerry's makes about $1 billion a year in sales. And so being anti-corporation and, anti-consumerism when you're making that much money and you are owned by Unilever is kind of a weird paradox. And also using so much dairy in general right? So they use an enormous amount of dairy. And in recent years, even though they, you know, claim to kind of be conscious, have admitted that a lot of the dairy they're using is coming from commercial dairy farms. And so being, you know, adamant about reducing their carbon footprint while at the same time using up such an incredible amount of dairy has been really controversial. So I think that's where Ben and Jerry's kind of falls, but they don't feel good. Ben and Jerry themselves.
Yeah. So you said you were at college when they opened their first shop.
You know, I think now that you give me the date, I'm not sure if they had opened the shop at that time or that they had a dairy farm there at University of Vermont.
Something.
And they had and that's where they opened up their first shop. And I think when I tasted the ice cream that they were making at the time, I don't know if Ben and Jerry's were actually there yet.
Right.
But it was the highest, it was such a high butterfat, I had trouble swallowing it. I no longer have trouble swallowing high butterfat. In fact, what you were just talking.
Now I'm eating a stick of butter.
No, you know, and it just brought back a memory that my mother was a dentist and she made me growing up drink 4 glasses of milk a day.
She said,
someday you'll be grateful, you'll have teeth like daddy, never have any cavities.
And, is it true?
Well, no, I mean, I do have good teeth, but I do have some fillings. The thing is, though, that I think that now I'm getting the calcium that she'd always recommended via cream and milk and dairy, because mm-hmm. we use a huge amount of egg yolk, heavy cream, milk, and here's another tip, the glucose that keeps it from crystallizing.
Glucose, yeah.
We even have a caramel that does not crystallize ever.
Did they
using glucose and a little bit of cream of tartar.
And glucose is invert
it's
sugar.
It's an invert sugar.
You can actually make your own.
In the cake Bible, I told people, how to make your own, because people couldn't get it yet in those days. Now you can get it at candy supply stores or cake and decorating supply stores or online. But since people couldn't get it readily and you absolutely had to have it in fondant, what I do is I use corn syrup and half of it I bring to a boil and then add it to the other half and you have the same consistency as glucose. But I recommend getting the actual glucose. It's easier, and it doesn't go bad.
And it's a natural product, right? Do they use it in Ben and Jerry's?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I have no idea. Interesting.
Yeah,
so speaking of recommending, each week on the show, we do a segment called Chef Recommends. This week, we figured it would be perfect, kind of just going from what we were just talking about, into everyone talking a little bit about their mm-hmm. their best recommendations for making ice cream at home. So, Breton, as a home cook, do you have a recommendation?
Well, I'll never forget, a long time ago, I bought a table, a Crate and Barrel. My mom bought me a table. I was like, Mom, I need a new kitchen table. And she said, for your birthday, I'm going to buy you a table. This is like, I'm older now. She's still buying me a table. Mm-hmm. And I returned the table. I didn't like it. And I returned it. And they're like, well, we can only give you store credit. And I bought one of those automatic ice cream makers, right? The ones that freeze themselves.
You have all the right instincts.
$400, right? I was like, you know what? I go, this is better than any kitchen table. I don't care. You can eat ice cream while you're standing. I don't need to sit. So I bought one of those and I started making a lot of ice cream and I started experimenting. And when I had my own restaurant, I used to make my own. And one of the problems that I always had was crystallization.
Yeah.
That's like that's the death of all ice cream. Mm-hmm. Like you're like, ugh, it's not creamy anymore, right? Mm. So I've made a lot, and I'm from Wisconsin. Like, I grew up with kind of the frozen custard style, and I'm partial to that.
That's Dairyland.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's I like that smooth, silky kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's just what I wanted.
But
what's your tip for achieving that at home?
Well, you know what? Is to eat it right away. Like, don't let it
sit. All at once.
Yeah.
I can give you a tip for that.
That's please.
We have to keep everything as cold as possible. A lot of people think that after they make the custard, that they can then churn it right away as soon as it's room temperature. It has to be below 40 degrees or 42.
So keep it fridge. It's better to make the base
the day before. That's and that will make a huge difference. Plus, pre-chill the ice cream maker. They don't tell you that on the ice cream makers.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Let it go for 15 minutes before you put the ice cream in. And then when you take it out, if it seems a bit too soft, put the whole thing in the freezer, let it firm up a bit, and then have a pre-chilled container. It's all about keeping it cold, because the minute it starts melting, when it refreezes, the crystals start forming. Then when you store it in the freezer, mostly people say 3 days, but I can keep it a lot longer if I surround it with ice, like with a champagne cooler or just an ice pack, or putting it in the drawer of the freezer with other cold things around it. All of that, and you can definitely keep your ice cream creamy. I'm so excited to share that.
That's amazing, Woody. Do you have a tip for making ice cream at home?
Yes.
Please share.
With the egg yolks, measure them and weigh them. Definitely weigh the
eggs. Yes, weighing egg. because a shrinking of the egg yolk
these days.
Yes,
yeah. Yep. Egg yolks are just little tiny things.
You know how I found out the reason? It took a long time, but finally, a person who had raised chickens said, "Oh, commercially, they're using younger laying hens because it's less expensive. So that way, there's a bigger proportion of yolk to white, and that affects everything. That's why we give a range in all the books now. We don't say just right. three egg yolks. We say 3 to 5 or 6 to 8.
Smart. Yeah, you're, to measure 10. In grams or liquid, exactly.
And weighing, yeah. of course, makes everything so much easier, faster, and more accurate.
Sorry,
so
what about at your restaurant? What did you find out when you, because you had a lot of ice cream.
Well,
you guys always had ice
yes,
cream.
Yes, we always made ice cream. My two tips are, going back to your tip, Rose, most people will not have the opportunity to do this, but we did use home model ice cream machines at the restaurant, and we had a walk-in freezer. So we would actually churn the ice cream with the whole machine in the freezer.
That's how we're doing our photo shoot.
Oh, really? Okay.
Well, it's not a walk-in freezer, but it sure feels like one because the whole apartment is kept really cold.
Oh, wow. So that was my first one. And my second one is kind of just how I cook in general. So when thinking of flavors, just find something around your house.
Exactly.
That's fun. Like, we used to do all kinds of things at Brucey. Sometimes we'd have leftover carrot cake and we'd say, oh, what should we do with this carrot cake? Give it to family meal? And be like, let's make an ice cream out of it. So we would take the carrot cake and churn it into the vanilla ice cream base. And then you have carrot cake ice cream. And it was fabulous. And so the same kind of thing I would recommend to try at home, like with creating flavors. I think find out the right technique from reading fabulous books like the one we're going to get next year on ice cream from Ms. Rose. But then also, you know, really have fun with like the actual flavor of it. And I, like we always say here on Life's Banquet, if you mess something up and it doesn't come out right, that's really okay. It shouldn't be a reason not to try it.
Yeah, and if you're not sure how, when you make your ice cream base, just divide it in half and try adding a little more of the whatever.
Totally. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. A little at a time goes, that's a very good tip. Another thing that we like to do here, you guys, is talk about our favorites in our top three section.
Oh, goody.
Naturally, today, I feel
I
like.
I warned you. I said, you better have your favorite flavors or places to get ice cream.
Absolutely.
It's really good that you warned us because
there's a lot.
You know, you end up loving everything. And
I
so
know.
When if you're not thinking off the top of your head, sometimes it's not really what it is.
Exactly.
This is like, whenever I think of the flavor, this is like a down, you know, this is the, you know, you're in jail.
Yes.
You're about to get executed. Hopefully not that it won't happen to us, but you never know with our situation.
Anything could happen, God forbid. But if we had to eat our last bites of ice cream, what would they be? Who would like to start? Rose.
All right.
Let's hear it. Your favorite three.
I love it so much, I call it pomegranate pride. And I just use bottled pomegranate juice.
Oh, my God.
It's unbelievable. But I concentrate it.
Yeah, yeah.
And reduce it. And that's what makes it so amazing. Okay, black raspberry. It grows wild where we live.
Oh,
I broke,
of course
this
it does.
Is talking about what you said, Zara, that I broke a tooth on a seed because that's the hardest seed of any thornberry.
You didn't have that last
thought,
glass of milk.
I'm not
going to
ever, again eat a black raspberry. And then I thought, I know, I'll turn it into ice cream. So I strained out the seeds
there
and
you
got
go.
And
the
you made me plant them in
most yes, we have
now
a huge
garden
now of them. We love them so much.
Oh, how
a
fabulous.
A 40 plant
okay.
garden
and
right
then
now.
Dulce de leche.
Oh,
I never thought I could equal Haagen-Dazs. It's better. I'm sorry, Haagen-Dazs, but you
know
when you get supermarket ice creams and they've gone through freeze thaw.
Yeah,
I know.
Yeah. Because I have a secret for making dulce de leche.
What is it?
What is it?
I'm not telling you till the book comes
Darn
out. I'm sorry, but I've tried everything and I've seen people write about how to make it, and it takes 7 hours to do it this way. But you're not standing there monitoring it, and I promise you, you will never buy it
do you
or
make
your, it any
do you make
other
yours
way.
With goat's milk? Do you, oh wait, I'm sorry.
No, I'm just using canned. Cajeta is really wonderful and has a different flavor.
I make that and I make it with goat's milk.
Wow. Of course.
Different.
That's how Woody did it, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Do you have a goat in your... Did you get a new pet?
Yeah, I got some Meyer's goat milk.
Oh, okay.
Or whatever it's from.
Better to use
Vermont.
It for milk than to use it for dinner.
Yeah, well, that's true, yeah. My mom used to make me drink goat's milk when I was a kid. I'm just kidding, she didn't.
Fresh goat's milk is amazing.
Oh,
we
delicious.
A farmer. Yeah, if it hasn't been pasteurized.
Yeah.
It lasts about one day, but it's worth it.
Delicious.
Okay, Woody, your turn for your favorite.
Okay. Also walking along the back roads where we are...
Oh, I know.
Bunch
we do
of
a
mint.
Lot of walking.
Bunch
oh.
of mint.
Mint.
And so we have mint, chocolate chip.
Mint, chocolate
oh.
chip.
Oh, we can tell you the secret to that.
How Please.
The chocolate chip
okay,
part.
Tell them.
Tell them.
Well, I don't like chips and ice cream because they're hard.
Mm-hmm.
So what we did is we made chocolate curls. And you think, what a pity to make the curl and then break it up. But it melts in your mouth in the ice cream.
Oh, my God.
Like a stracciatella.
Yeah, exactly. But it's easier to do than, oddly enough.
I bet, yeah.
Because stracciatella is very hard to drizzle, you know, like that.
The warm, yeah.
Yeah.
And because it's homemade, we also put mint leaves in as well.
Yeah, fresh mint leaves get chopped at the end.
Okay, so mint. Okay, so that's number three. What's your number two?
The black raspberry.
Oh, a little crossover. And?
And the bourbon balls, because that's cookies and cream. And
yes. Can you tell us what's in a bourbon ball, though, Woody?
Homemade chocolate wafers in the bed.
Homemade chocolate wafers
ground
up with pecans.
Mm-hmm.
And then lots of bourbon.
Okay, perfect.
And
just
that's it. And then
sure.
You roll into balls, and then they just stay into balls.
Then they break up in the
machine. Yeah, you don't have to cook them after.
Oh. I like that. You know what I like about... You're all about shortcutting, but without necessarily cutting corners.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Yeah. And see, the reason why I like the bourbon balls, it goes back to my childhood.
Okay. Oh.
See, I gave up being a millionaire because Dad didn't think so.
Oh.
Back in 65, my dad always had ice cream, almost like every night.
Yeah, of course.
And we ran out of chocolate sauce one night, and I'm like, well, I want my chocolate. Well, Dad always had Oreo Hydrox cookies, which are like an Oreo. So I said, I'll just take the filling out, grind them up, and put them in the ice cream. And I had chocolate, I had cookies and cream ice cream way before somebody else came up with the idea.
What I mean by everybody inventing something and thinking somebody else did?
Mm. Yeah.
We all come up with the same wonderful... If it's a really wonderful idea, sooner or later, there'll be other people.
And then there's going to be one special person that makes money on it.
Yeah, like Dairy Queen.
Exactly.
So, Zara, what about you?
Oh, guys, well, how much time do we have? I really do love ice cream. I don't eat it a lot, but my number three favorite is strawberry ice cream. A simple, clean, lovely strawberry ice cream. Number two, Woody, I'm going to do a crossover with you on this one, is mint chip. However, yay! I'm going to be real here and say that my real favorite mint chip is a green mint chip, probably not of the greatest quality. This is speaking from the nostalgic point of view, not necessarily what's actually best. But that green mint chip, if you're like down on the Jersey Shore or something and a sugar cone, dripping down your hand, all kinds of food coloring.
I don't mind a little food coloring.
There's something about a green mint chip that just reminds me of my childhood.
I recommend using green food coloring for that, but not so it looks like an aquamarine swimming pool.
Yes, just so it's
you have to really be careful because it gets darker and darker.
A seafoam green, not a Kelly green, of course.
Because you don't want it to be khaki color. And
no,
then people have to see the mint flecks or just imagine them. You know?
Exactly. You're absolutely right. And then my number one is actually a wink and a nudge to good old Ben and Jerry, who are not sponsoring this show, Coffee Heath Bar Crunch.
Oh my god,
that is the most epic flavor. If I really had to pick one last ice cream ever to have, it would be Ben and Jerry's Coffee Heath Bar Crunch.
I wonder if it's too late to add Heath Bar Crunch to the book.
Talk
to your publisher. I'm sure they'll be happy about that. Okay, so ready?
Yes.
Okay, here we go. I'm like, this is the ultimate. It's me. Just kidding. Okay, number three, cookies and cream. I mean, come on.
Yum.
How can you not?
High five.
Ow, God, Woody. Just kidding.
Woody.
Number two, chocolate peanut butter. Because
we have it.
Yum.
We have it.
Okay. Wait, a chocolate. I'm sorry. I need to interject here. A chocolate base with peanut butter, like swirl?
Chocolate base. You're correct. Chocolate base with peanut butter, either whatever it is, swirls. I do prefer swirls. I'm not a chunk kind of a guy. That's why I've never.
Not a chunk lover.
I don't love Ben and Jerry's ice cream because I like the smooth texture, except. Getting down to my number one, and this, I hope you have, I know you will, butter pecan.
Oh,
because, first of all, butter in ice cream,
it's
right?
A butter ice cream.
And it's, to me, it's so iconic Wisconsin. I feel like every grandmother and everybody was, you would sit on the porch or whatever you're in, and butter pecan was always that flavor.
You're not going to believe this, but we have 150 recipes, and they're not far out. Like, there's no bacon ice cream.
Oh, thank goodness.
But there is Thai corn ice cream. I had that in Thailand, and I was amazed how wonderful that is.
Oh, wow. Can you explain a little bit what is Thai corn ice cream?
Well, corn is part of the ice cream. I mean, it's...
Yes, but what makes it Thai?
From Thailand. That's where they did it.
Right. But
I've never seen any other culture making ice cream with corn.
Does it have any other Thai flavors in it?
No.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Okay. Amazing. A corn ice cream is fabulous. I believe we probably did that at Brucey once.
Did you ever go to the place Oto that has gelato? And there used to be that woman, Meredith. I can't remember her last name, but she was the pastry chef. And she made lots of unique gelato flavors. And one of them was corn. And it was, she always said because there was so much starch in the corn, that acted as the natural thickener. I'm sure that's probably something. similar that you found.
How fab.
There was some, and I can't remember which recipe, where we absolutely did not need any thickener because you got it from some product. I don't think it was the corn, maybe less, but that's why we adjust each thing. And there are actually two recipes in the book that don't require, I mean, you wouldn't use an ice cream machine for. And the reason that they don't get icy is because they're made with Italian meringue, which means that you have egg white that you beat, I mean, you guys know this, but that you beat hot sugar syrup in, and that prevents it from freezing. And one is a nougat and the other is a lemon ginger. And they're two of my favorite recipes.
A frozen Italian meringue. I didn't know that
was so
new to
fabulous.
Me.
I have one question that I would like to ask everyone while we're on the topic of favorites. What is everyone's least favorite ice cream flavor? Breton?
White chocolate raspberry.
Oh, but I have a wonderful white chocolate.
I know.
You know what? It's all going so
the
well.
The texture is so beautiful. I put gold leaf on it.
Okay, oh, how fun. That I'm is. Just glamorous.
I'm sorry. You're allowed to dislike what
I've just
dislike.
Offended.
That's very glamorous.
What about you?
Why are you offended?
You know, I think it's just something I associate with the year 1991. Like, everything at that point was white chocolate raspberry. Don't you remember, like, suddenly, like, every restaurant you went, it was like, tonight our dessert special is white chocolate raspberry.
No,
I was
but, like, you know, a lot of people don't like white chocolate because they're not having the real white chocolate. And it's too sweet. Mm. Yeah, because you have to realize it's one third sugar. So you just take that out of the rest of it.
Yeah, I mean, it's
well, you'll have to try ours and put aside. Maybe I'll make you try it blindfold so that you won't know it's white chocolate.
We'll have to come back 1 year from now. You guys are on.
What flavor do you not
My least favorite ice cream flavor is, I'm not really a chocolate ice cream person, so I don't really like a chocolate base with things in it. So I'm going to go for like a rocky road. Doesn't really speak to me. I would eat it. There's almost nothing I wouldn't eat, but it doesn't particularly speak to me. Woody?
Woody,
what? Well, we contend the same thing. The marshmallows.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Woody, we're aligned, I feel we're sitting next to each other. I think it's for a reason. We have similar buddies. Tastes.
Rose and I are fighting over white chocolate.
This is getting like really heated. Rose, do you have a least favorite ice cream flavor?
I don't know about flavor, but we put in chocolate chip cookie sandwiches in the book. Mm. And I gave them all to Woody when we took them home because I don't
like the style shoot.
Yeah, because I don't like a hard cookie.
The hard,
The hard against the creamy. Mm. But I have the chocolate wafers that are slightly soft and that I'll like. So it's not so much a flavor I don't like. Is there a flavor I really would just soon not have? Probably I didn't put it in the book. I mean, if somebody else loves it, I'd put it in.
Totally.
If it's like a totally popular thing, I would say. And I'm sure that there are some things... I don't like things that are too sweet. And there's some things that you just can't remove the sugar to compensate. And I'm trying to think what that could be. I even love peppermint ice cream. And I didn't think I would.
Yeah. I love peppermint ice
cream. A friend
of
mine said every year at Christmas she feels so sad that she has to take down the peppermint candy canes from the Christmas tree that she turns it into ice cream. And
fabulous.
I thought, yeah, I'll try it. And you know, they're slightly not sticky so much as soft and crunchy at the same
time.
Yeah,
they melt in there, kind of similar to the Heath bar and the Heath bar crunch. It's a some kind of reaction.
Melt in your mouth.
I've really put aside my prejudices always to be able to taste something new because you never know in a different form or a different temperature how you might like it.
That's a really
great
tip.
I could change my mind in 5 minutes.
Yes, Breton.
I could be like, what do you mean? I love white chocolate raspberry. I never said that. What do you mean? Well, now it's
no, it's on tape.
Exactly.
It's on tape,
we
so
have
you can
recorded.
Play it back to me and shame me later.
So, Rose, can you let us know and all our listeners know, please, where we can find you on social media, anything that you would like to plug, anything you have coming up? We want to know where you are and what you're doing.
Exactly.
Thank you, Zara, because actually I've been swallowed up alive by social media ever since I started. Woody and I spend so much time answering questions on the blog, which is realbakingwithrose.com. We answer everybody's questions. It gives information about the product line, which is Rose's signature series. That's going to be available, of course, on Amazon and also Bed Bath & Beyond, Food 52, and now, any day now, Zabar's, which is right near where I grew up, so it's kind of like coming home.
Perfect.
Also, I have an Instagram account, which is Real Baking with Rose, and, of course, Facebook.
And YouTube.
What else? Twitter. YouTube. And that's we have all of the YouTube things listed, of which there are about 55 or 60 by
about
now.
120.
120
really?
Videos.
Well, these are the videos from her, you know, previous TV show,
yes.
Baking Magic, her appearances on
Charlie Rose.
Oh,
I watched your Martha Stewart where you made the whipped cream tube cake this morning.
Oh, you did.
And you really were like ordering Martha around. I really liked
I was
that. You were like, stop
myself.
That's enough. And she was like,
I had.
That's why
had
Martha did
with her.
Never had around before.
Well,
she just knew. No, she was always wonderful to me because when her first book came out on weddings, I was
she
in her wedding.
She never put you on her
book.
Show.
Oh my gosh,
she finally did.
Why?
Why? I guess it was the Hallmark show, right? Oh, yes, her daughter was about to give birth. And, you know, like 2 days before she was giving birth, she was antsy, and she started making what is the cake? The whipped cream cake that you were watching.
Yeah,
in all different sizes. She made tons of them. And so that's what gave Martha the idea that she should have me do it on the show.
She's like, oh, I'll get Rose.
Amazing.
Somebody call Rose. She'll come on.
And the first thing she said was, it's so great having you back on the show. And I thought, back? I've been waiting for years to be on.
Martha.
I guess she didn't realize I hadn't been on the show.
No, Martha likes to try to top their guest.
Yeah, of course.
So she was...
You've noticed. Yeah, go ahead.
So you told the story of what you did to her.
Oh, yeah. Well, I said that you were... she accused me of not scraping the bowl, which is one of my big things. And I said, but Martha, I'm too short to see into the bowl.
That's an amazing response. And on that note, we will have to ask Martha about this when we have her on the show. Martha, call us, please.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we are all out of time. But this was an amazing, amazing honor for us both.
Yeah.
Both
we're so
fans.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's so great to have such educated hosts.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Kindred
so much.
Spirits.
Thank you both
so
much.
Well, we are excited. Again, stay tuned. Pre-order on Amazon if you can wait a year to get that ice cream book, but we will obviously continue to talk about it. I know I will.
Absolutely.
And if you haven't gotten yourself a copy of the Pie or Pastry Bible, the Cake Bible, it's a must.
A must have for every kitchen.
Or Baking Basics too.
Yes.
And if you can wait till 2021, the Cookie Bible.
Oh, yes. My gosh.
What goes with ice cream? Cookies.
That's amazing. Yeah. All right, guys. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Hasta la pasta.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to learn more about our 10-year anniversary celebration happening all year long, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us on Facebook at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.